society as this democratizing law, one that helps define us as free and proud Americans, has been further compromised. One of our panelists today will tell you how this push for secrecy is even affecting science research budgets and the way scientists are treated. The panel before you brings diverse areas of interest and expertise, and that diversity itself will show you just how far this issue has permeated our national life. I'm going to give you brief introductions to our panelists, beginning with Jonathan Adler at the far end of the table from me. Jonathan Adler is a professor of law and co-director of the Center for Business Law and Regulation at the Case Western Reserve University School of Law. He teaches environmental law. He previously clerked for the Honorable David B. Sentell on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit and worked at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, where I believe you directed the Environmental Studies program, Jonathan. He's a contributing editor for National Review Online and a frequent contributor to other print and broadcast outlets, and the editor or co-author of three books on environmental policy, and we appreciate Jonathan's being with us here today. Next to Jonathan is a man few of you need any introduction to. Joe Davis is a freelance writer and editor in Washington, who serves as director of SEJ's Watchdog Project, which I've come to know as a consequence of being involved in this, and I am delighted to have come to know it, a terribly important tool, reporting on secrecy trends and supporting journalists' efforts to make better use of the Freedom of Information Act. He also edits SEJ's daily Enviro Journalism Roundup and the biweekly Tip Sheet, an electronic newsletter of story ideas and sources by SEJ and the RT and Radio and Television News Directors Foundation. And next to Joe is James Hansen, head of NASA's Institute for Space Studies in New York City. For a quarter century, he has worked on understanding the Earth's climate. He has tried to raise the public consciousness about the perils of global climate change. He was elected in 1995 to the National Academy of Sciences and in 2001 received the prestigious Heinz Environment Award. Next to Dr. Hansen is Richard Huff, who served for 24 years as the founding director of the Department of Justice's Office of Information and Privacy, and I think a total of 36 years as a civil servant in all. As you know, the Department of Justice's Office of Information and Privacy deals with the administration of the Freedom of Information Act. Richard Huff is an expert on FOIA and has adjudicated thousands of FOIA and Privacy Act administrative appeals before retiring recently, although his version of retirement is to go and talk about FOIA, and we're very thankful for that. And finally, Senator Patrick Leahy, whom we are, of course, honored to have with us today and who has long been known as a strong advocate for the Freedom of Information Act and for open government in general. First elected in 1974 at the age of just 34, he currently is the highest-ranking Democrat on the Judiciary Committee and stands seventh in seniority in the Senate. In 1996, Senator Leahy's efforts to support freedom of information won him a place in the FOIA Hall of Fame, and I know in the hearts of many in this room. I do need to specify that each of our panelists, unless he tells you otherwise, is speaking only for himself and not for his institution, and also that I will be concentrating a bit over much on Senator Leahy at the beginning because he has to leave us a bit early, and we will be giving you all in the audience a chance to ask him questions before he has to leave, and then we'll return to a bit more general discussion. So with that introduction, I'm going to take my seat, and I'm going to pitch the first question to Joe Davis, so watch out, Joe. Joe, I'm going to pitch this to you because I want to get started with a bit of an overview that will, I think, give all of our give all of our panelists a chance to give a bit of a general response. I've given the audience something of a look at how SEJ came to feature government secrecy as a topic for a plenary at an annual conference, Joe, and that would have seemed unlikely perhaps a few years ago. I wonder if you could take the longer view and tell us how the progression of government secrecy has looked over the past 15 or 20 years.
Well, I'm glad you asked. I think it's important to realize that a lot of the forces that are working for secrecy right now or against open government didn't start with this administration and didn't start with 9-1-1. You can go back a good deal before that. One of my favorite examples is that, you know, in 1990 they passed a revision of the Clean Air Act that had risk management plans in it, and the idea was to disclose to communities the risks of hazardous chemicals that those plants might be handling. But it took most of the 90s to put in place the regulations to implement that. And the reason for that was that there was a lot of industry resistance. So I think the important point to take home from that is that for a whole variety of motives and reasons, a number of political forces, including many different industry groups, have been pushing for less openness about government information for a long time. In 1987 and 88, 87, the African bombings kind of brought in a new generation of secrecy concerns. The whole idea of critical infrastructure information was actually invented by President Clinton and his security czar, Dick Clark, and using executive orders, they started trying to inventory what some of the most vulnerable spots in the nation's infrastructure were, and the beginning of a process of guarding that information. Then the Bush administration came in, and the Bush administration's record suggests clearly that they're very inclined towards secrecy. And events prove that true. Before long, the 9/11 event happened that Geneva referred to, and what we saw then was, within a week or two, vast tracts of information were taken off the web, including chemical risk information. And the idea was, we don't want to give a roadmap to terrorists. But in fact, a number of other agendas were being served by that. So a lot of the windows on information shops were shuttered then. In the next few years, there were several laws passed and a number of regulatory initiatives that happened that really institutionalized the secrecy. The two laws that did this the most were the Homeland Security Act and the Bioterrorism Act. But I think one that wasn't done by legislation that's really germane to us was some stuff done at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which without a real legal mandate used its regulatory authority to close down information on pipelines. For example, the online access to pipeline maps, gone. And a lot of information about liquefied natural gas import terminals was put behind the curtain of secrecy under the pretext of protecting the nation from terrorism, but it also protected the nation from knowing that these facilities did have a lot of inherent dangers. And it protected the nation from knowing that the FERC and the industry were rushing to license a huge new wave of these terminals. And often, the environmental studies and the safety studies were secret. So it would be entirely possible for an environmental impact statement of one of these things to be unavailable to reporters. There are other kinds of secrecy that were going on, the kind of science suppression of science information that maybe Dr. Hansen's going to talk about a little bit, and some other things that one of my favorite examples was a case where the Natural Resources Defense Council did a FOIA request to EPA for documents on their regulatory proceedings about rat poison. And the documents revealed that, well, the agency had been meeting off the record, behind the scenes, with the rat poison industry to soften rat poison regulations. This is not about security. This is about keeping out of the public eye things that should be known. One other movement in this overall symphony of secrecy is what's been going on with FOIA. I think a lot of people here could testify from their own experience that they've had more trouble, not less, getting FOIA requests filled. And there's been a number of initiatives and counter-initiatives on FOIA reform, which I think Senator Leahy is going to talk about quite a bit. But one other thing that you can see is it's harder to get to government officials. You have to go through the press office, and the press office won't let you. And I think what we need to what I would ask people to ask is, are there policy reasons or political reasons or other reasons for this secrecy? And I would ask people to challenge the idea that it's all required in the name of national security or sound science or whatever it might be.
Joe.
So that's my
that's
story.
Great. Thank you very much. I want to be sure we give other panelists who may wish to give his own overview of the past 20 years or so. I wonder, Dick Huff, if you would like to jump in on that.
Well, I think I don't have nearly the breadth that Joe does in terms of his coverage. I'm sort of a two-trick pony, and I know something about the Freedom of Information Act and the Privacy Act. And touching on the Freedom of Information Act, I think over the past 20 or so years, we have seen variations where we have had a bit more disclosure and we have had a bit less disclosure. But overwhelmingly, with regard to the statutory provisions, the large share of the information that has been disclosed and the large share that has been withheld has, in my opinion, stayed relatively similar or relatively the same over the years. Where there has been a difference, though, is not in terms of what can be protected, but in terms of whether or not to make discretionary disclosures. And that's something that I have seen with regard to first Griffin Bell's memorandum dealing with the Freedom of Information Act, where he talked about even if information can be protected, it should be disclosed unless there's a foreseeable harm to the government, to a private industry, or to an individual. And then William French Smith, under President Reagan, essentially said no, in so many words, said no, we're not going to be having discretionary disclosures. Attorney General Reno, under President Clinton, said that unless there is demonstrable harm, information shall be disclosed. There's got to be an exemption, and there's going to be demonstrable harm. So hers was a much more open disclosure-oriented policy. And Attorney General Ashcroft tapered back on that, cut back on that, by saying that the that there can be discretionary disclosures. It certainly was not as harsh as Attorney General William French Smith. There can be discretionary disclosures, but before an agency does that, they should be made only after full and deliberate consideration of the interests that could be implicated from the disclosure of the information. So it was certainly considerably less of an encouragement, although it just did permit agencies to do that. It also said that that will be essentially up to the agencies. Under Attorney General Reno, she said that if an agency does decide not to exercise its discretion, and if the case goes into litigation, the Department of Justice's litigators would second-guess that before they decided to litigate, even assuming we did have a valid exemption. And Attorney General Ashcroft's memorandum says, if the agency does have a good exemption, the general rule is we're not going to second-guess them in litigation with regard to discretionary disclosures. So that's the sort of policy that I've seen from the non-legislative side of it, from the policy of discretionary disclosures over this period.
Thanks. Jonathan, I am going to give you a chance to give a different perspective on that broad overview, but FOIA has come up now so much, and of course we have here Senator Leahy. I want you to talk to us about, you and Senator Cornyn have been introducing pieces of legislation to improve the functioning of FOIA, obviously seemingly unobjectionable, or maybe that's just me, Faster FOIA Act, which would, as I understand it, just establish a federal commission to investigate why it takes so long to get many FOIA requests fulfilled. Why? It seems so simple. Why hasn't this passed into law?
Well, I've spent years on FOIA. I wrote much of the Electronic FOIA Act back in the 90s. Can everybody hear all right? No.
No.
All right.
Sorry,
Geneva, you never get it back.
That's all right.
Geneva said that. Is that better? Yeah, I always wonder when people say. If you can't hear me in the back, please raise your hand. You wonder how the hell can they raise their hand if they can't hear you to begin with. But Geneva said that the moderator, or the panelists, would only speak for themselves, not for the organization they represent. Trust me, I do not speak for the leadership of the United States Senate. I'm here. We're somewhat at odds. I'm here. Nancy Basilchuk told me I'd better be here. She's coming all the way from Norway. I can come down from my farmhouse 30 miles from here. But I wrote much of the electronic FOIA in the 90s with the idea that we had to keep finding better and quicker ways to do it. We don't do paperwork, we do electronic things. And I thought we were on a start. You understand that every administration, Republican or Democratic, has reasons not to like FOIA, because if you make a mistake, it's a lot nicer to hide it. And if you do something you want everybody to know about, you're going to send out a million press releases and get it out that way. So what has happened with this administration, I've been there with six different administrations. I have never seen one anywhere near the secretive, neither Republican nor Democratic, as secretive as this. They're obsessed with it. This extends, incidentally, those of you who are trying to get information from it, don't feel like you're the Lone Ranger. Members of Congress can't get it. The oversight, I'm on the Judiciary Committee, the oversight of the Department of Justice. John Stewart in The Daily Show actually did a skit basically just stringing together the Attorney General's answers. Alberto Gonzalez, I'm sorry, I don't think I should answer. I don't really think I should answer. No, I'm sorry, we can't go. No, gee, I can't answer. No, that on stuff that had been in the newspaper, for Pete's sake. So and then, of course, you go into data banks and everything else. They want to block all that. They're treating information like it's their sovereign property. It doesn't belong to any of us. And yet, when I say that we don't receive it in the Congress, so many times we get the information that we need, actually because reporters have found it first, or reporters have gotten it, have dug it out, have gotten through a little bit they can get out of FOIA. That's how we found out about conditions at Guantanamo Bay, which led to the Hamblin versus Rumsfeld Supreme Court case. It was in a FOIA lawsuit. We learned the lucrative government oil reconstruction contract in Iraq was awarded to Halliburton after closely coordinating with the office of my dear friend, the Vice President, who, while he has had conversations with me on occasion, never bothered to raise up this point about the contract in Iraq. We were told Jack Abramoff never came to the White House until a FOIA lawsuit got the Secret Service logs and found out how often he was there. But the charter for the Department of Homeland Security is the biggest rollback in 40 years. Stamp critical infrastructure information at the top of a page and away you go. You can't get a hold of it. You want to get a sweetheart deal? You want to get a sweetheart deal in setting up one of these multi-billion dollar security contracts? Just stamp on it. Just stamp like that as security infrastructure, and you will never get to see it. And I guarantee you, those of us who actually have to vote for the money, have the oversight, we won't see it either. The Bush-Cheney administration kept vital secrets packed secret by silencing scientists and experts. Jim Hansen is here, is going to talk, can talk about that. He knows what that was like, or on mercury emissions. And I'll give you one example. They were fighting to get through a Medicare bill or a Medicare prescription drug plan, or let us increase the quarterly profits of the drug company's plan, as some of us called it. And this thing was so tight that even in a rubber stamp Republican Congress, there was a virtually tie vote in the House, and they broke their own rules, broke the law to keep the vote open for hours and hours while they're promising everything to everybody. But one thing they kept promising, it would never go over $400 billion. Unfortunately, they had in their own accountants, so it could go to $600 billion, and the accountant was told, if you tell Congress, you will be fired. You know what's really absurd? The intelligence agencies are now spending billions of dollars to classify 55,000 pages of information that have been on public websites for years. They've been in the archives. You could probably go down to the Fletcher Free Library here in town, and you would find them. But, if you want to debate an issue where they're making a mistake, and if they know what the debate's going to go, those things will be stamped secret before you can do it, so you can't talk about it. Incidentally, in 2003, they spent $6.5 billion of your tax dollars to reclassify this thing. So what I want, and what we're trying to pass, an Open Government Act, S-394, to let you have timely responses to your requests. It gives strong incentives to act on FOIA requests. That it would clarify that fee waivers should also apply to freelance journalists. Anybody in favor of that in this?
Absolutely.
Thought you might be. We've reported out. It's actually an odd couple of legislation. Myself and John Cornyn in Texas put it in. There is a certain political divide between us and our political philosophy. We joined hands on this. Thought we might move faster, but as I was telling some of you before we came up here, again, with such a rubber stamp Congress, the Bush-Cheney administration simply told them put a hold on it so it wouldn't go through.
Does that mean it won't be scheduled for floor action?
Ha ha! If you think it will, I have a very large bridge in Brooklyn that I want to sell you. No, they won't do it. Now, it is possible, if there really is a tsunami, and this sounds very partisan, but I'm just telling you what's realistic. There's a very large tsunami about 10 days from now in the congressional races. That may well change. But the bottom line, I'll close with this, and we can go back to the specific questions if you want. I've been there 32 years. I relied on being able to get information from the government just as reporters do. We can't get it. We cannot get it, and Republicans can't get it either. The few who actually do want to do real oversight, even though they are intimidated constantly by the Bush-Cheney administration, they're just not giving it. You want to call a hearing? Call a hearing, of course. And people come up and say nothing, or we'll send somebody who's about five, they'll send somebody who's five levels down and said, I'd love to answer the questions, but you see, that's above my pay grade. Where's the guy in your pay grade? He's speaking the Rotary Club. Can't be here. Sorry, Mr. Chairman. And this, the secrecy is hurting everybody. I told the president here a few weeks ago in a meeting we had at the White House that, frankly, he has not been helped by this. He hasn't been helped by it. We have rubber stamp Congress and total secrecy because all the screw-ups Nobody ever questioned it. He never hears anybody question it. He's told everything is fine. Well, it's not fine in Iraq. It's not fine in Guantanamo. It is not fine in our energy policy. It is not fine in the VA. And it's not going to be fine for those who are coming back from Iraq, all because of screw-ups that should be public, that should be corrected, and are not being corrected. Thank you.
I would really appreciate your kind of getting at some of the reasons. What do people say? What are the objections that your colleagues have raised in the Judiciary Committee say when it was... I mean, what are the objections?
Are you one of those people that want the terrorists to take over? Good Lord, woman. Have you been spending time at Tora Bora with Osama bin Laden?
First you want to sell me a bridge, then you ask me if I'm one of those people. But
this is it. You have to understand, we are at a war here. We can't tell you why those $3 extra billion went to Halliburton in a no-bid contract. We're at war here. Do you want the terrorists to win? We have to secure our borders. Do you want the terrorists to come across our borders? Now, being married to a woman of French-Canadian descent, whose family comes down all the time, they find take a little umbrage at this. The whole thing comes down to that. No matter what it is, well, we're at war. The commander-in-chief can't take time on this. I realize this sounds partisan, but it has become farcical. It has become absolutely farcical, except for the fact the country's been damaged by it. You do not know mistakes. This is the only administration in history has never made a mistake. And they don't want anybody to know about it. It pervades the administration. They put people in, and then they get rewards for those who do. A person was put in from industry into the Department of Interior to give away everything to the people who had hired him before, is rewarded with a nomination to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, where he will then sit on, if he was confirmed, sit on cases of the matters that he helped, the policies he helped get through, most of them in secret. So far, he has not gotten out of committee. Go ahead.
You and Senator Cornyn are certainly championing this as a bipartisan effort. So what happens in a couple of weeks if another House or both?
That's a good question. And John and I are serious about this. We work very, very hard. We've gone and testified together. He takes the same attitude that I do, that we should put it through because a Democratic administration might face the same temptations. He's looking at the long range as am I, that the best government is government in the sunshine. And that's what we're trying to do. I think, for example, if the House changes, I don't know what will happen in the Senate. Right now it's on a knife edge. Obviously, if both change, we will get this through. For one thing, I'd be chairman of the Committee of Jurisdiction. We'd get it through the Senate. I'm going to argue that there is a major change, even in the makeup of the Senate, whether we're in the majority or not. I'm going to argue that this is one thing we could do that people could actually coalesce around, even if we only passed it in the Senate, so that we could the House could get a running start next year, which in the House will be Democratic controlled. They would have a chance to send it back. I talked with Senator Cornyn just before I left. I knew I was going to come to this. He assures me that he's in for the long run. I believe him. We will get it done. But the damage has been done so far. The materials have been taken out, and a few brave people have stood up. The archivists of the United States have suddenly started saying, wait a minute, how can you take things out of the archives that have been there for decades, available to scholars, and suddenly you're marking them secret? The same thing's happened with presidential papers. It is a mistake. It does not make us freer. I would argue very, very strongly it makes us less free as a people.
Well, one more follow-up. You have said that the provision of critical infrastructure information guts FOIA at the expense of our national security and the health and safety of the American people. Would a Democratic majority affect your restore FOIA legislation in a way that, how would it affect narrowing?
Well, I think we can get it. I think we would get it through. I think we would have the commission to decide how to reduce these delays. I think we'd have something like a, with the prestige of a 9/11 commission, look at this whole thing and go back and basically say in a, an objective way to the American people, things are being hidden that you should have available to you that affects your health, affects your safety, doesn't protect us from terrorists, but might protect your children from mercury poisoning, might protect you in your wallet, and we'll be able to do it. We'll also, the kind of incentives we could have in there would make it possible for these FOIA requests to make it actually advantageous to the department to answer them quicker. Some departments do very well, others do not. One thing we want to do is have a tracking system. So like, you know, if you ever send something by FedEx or UPS, you actually go on your home computer and track where it is. Have something like tracking systems, you can know at which point in the bureaucracy your FOIA request is, whether there are other FOIA requests ahead of you or behind you, or whether some are going to be joined, and who that might be. Can you imagine how that would speed things up? Can you imagine how much time that would save anybody in this room who's made a FOIA request?
Nick Huff, do you want to respond on some of Senator Leahy's?
Well, just on the last point, and I don't think it quite goes as far as Senator Leahy has proposed legislation does, but President Bush last December promulgated an executive order on the Freedom of Information Act, the first executive order that had ever been promulgated by a president that had dealt directly and exclusively with the FOIA. And in there, it set up a number of different steps and requirements that should be done. All of which, or many of which, would lead to one of the major points of, at least from my view, Senator Leahy and Senator Cornyn's legislation to move responses much, much more quickly. And one of those points does deal with the tracking of requests that the executive order and the implementation of the executive order at many agencies is set up so that you may not, it may be that you can do it by internet, but I think at a minimum you can call up and say, listen, I got my number is 2006-1. That was, you know, 3 weeks ago. It's supposed to be out in another 2 or 3 days. Where is it? And you would be able to get somebody to tell you where it is in the status, who's working on it, and something. So I think it's a step toward that one sure. aspect of your legislation.
No, and I agree. And to the great surprise, that was Executive Order 13392. And to the great surprise of the White House, I praised the president doing that. He actually called me ahead of time and told me he was going to do it. It's a good first step. But as you know, the implementation is very much a preliminary. And not moving forward. I want to lock this into law. The thing is, you lock specific things into a FOIA law, requiring timelines, requiring ways of requesting, requiring fee waivers and all that. It is far more difficult to take it out. Executive order can be changed by the next president. This was a good step forward. I said so publicly at the time. But I want to lock these things into law so that if a president wants to roll back, they carry a heavier burden with the public.
I want to give the other panelists a chance to respond to Senator Leahy with any questions or comments, and then I want to be sure to involve the audience in questions or comments for Senator Leahy before he has to go. Joe or Jonathan or Jim Hansen, anybody want to make a comment? Yeah, thank you. That'd be great.
I'll just ask to clarify. Are there holds on the open government FOIA bill?
We're all going to have to speak into the mic.
The question was whether are there holds on the bill. I've learned over 32 years that you have holds and you have holds. And somehow, even though you have bipartisan sponsorship on something that were it to come up and were it to be brought to a vote, would pass, somehow it never comes up for a vote. Now, we've been very, very busy on things like flag burning and gay marriage and Terry Schiavo and things like this. And, so it's just simply knowing if the government's working right has to take second place, but if there were no holds, it would pass.
Well, let me just follow up. I've been to most, if not all, of the hearings and read most, if not all, of the coverage, and I haven't heard a single word spoken publicly in opposition to this legislation.
I know it. That makes you kind of wonder why it hasn't gone anywhere.
What's that all about?
Yeah. Well, you know, this is how many times you see people come out and sign legislation, and I'm in favor of this, but suddenly it never goes anywhere. They can tell everybody back home, boy, I'm in favor of that. We saw it with the torture legislation. Everybody talked about senators were calling press conferences, by gosh, we're going to the president's feet to the fire on torture legislation, we're going to get this passed, all praising themselves. Well, of course, most of them were stripped out the next day, and the same senators who had basically in presidential campaigns and whatnot, and how they stood up there, you hear a tiny little whimper late in the Friday afternoon, that's it. You've been there long enough, you see enough of this. People are all in favor of those good government things, but somehow they don't pass. I intend, and I've told the leadership, if this doesn't come up for a vote, I'm going to start attaching it, to the extent I can with the Germanus rule, to other things to make people vote it down. Voting it up is easy. I want them to have to vote it down. In the way you're shaking your head, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Jim?
Yeah, I'd like to make one of the comments that I wanted to make relates to Congress, so I'd like to make it before Senator leaves. I've been quoted. Can you hear me, by the way? I've been quoted accurately as saying that in my 39 years in NASA, I've never seen anything like the degree to which the information flow from scientists to the public has been inhibited as it is now. But with regard to this secrecy issue, I've written an article called Swift Voting, Stealth Budgeting, and the Unitary Executive, which will be in the November-December issue of World Watch magazine. And there should be some copies at the back of the room or at the SEJ desk. Or you can get them from my personal website. And if you'd like to be on my email list, you can send me an email. But one of the points that I want to make relating to stealth, it concerns something that has a big impact on me and on the research, not just by our group, but by throughout the nation. And that is a retroactive 20% cut in the earth science research and analysis budget, which the executive branch made in the middle of 2006, made it retroactive to the beginning of the year. There was a 4.5% cut in the earth science budget, but they specifically, not on NASA's initiative, but on the initiative of OMB, directed that it should be a 20% cut in research and analysis, which funds laboratories like Goddard Space Flight Center and universities around the country. And that's a going out of business cut, because there are infrastructure costs which will take up most of the 80%. But this is a little strange, because my understanding is that the Constitution says Congress is control the purse strings, and it's not to be made in cuts to be made in a report of the administration to Congress, which is not noticed by anybody.
We're going to come back more to your article, but I mean, I understand what gives to Senator Leahy, right?
But one other comment, though, about this. In addition, the freight in the same budget item that retroactively cut the budget, there was a change in the NASA's mission statement. We had spent a good deal of time iterating among NASA employees about our mission statement, and the one concerning Earth was the first line of the NASA mission was to understand and protect the home planet. That line disappeared by executive action, and I ask dozens of people, NASA employees, if they knew about this, including my boss, nobody had heard about it. It was simply done between OMB and the administrator. And that's an example of the sort of thing that's going on. But it seems to me they're taking over responsibilities which, in the case of the budget, really are supposed to belong to Congress.
Senator Lay, do you have any response?
I actually read your article about 12:30 this morning, or last night, I should say, 12:30, between 12:30 and quarter one this morning. The unitary government, this is, executive believes more and more in that. 700 signing statements on bills, more than, well, many, many times more than all presidents put together. Lyle's favorite people in Congress to claim credit on legislation like torture or military tribunals or whatever, but they don't care what we pass because they just ignore it. One of the Supreme Court nominees, Samuel Alito, was one of the original designers of this unitary government. It ignores the fact that we're three branches of government, and the importance of that, not from any ego, being in one of those branches, but the three branches have served as a check and balance. It makes the government work better. But this is happening, you mentioned NASA, it's happening, EPA is happening in numerous other parts of the government. Things are just changed. You have congressional directives, and they'll take an executive order going an entirely different direction. It makes the days of Watergate and things like that look like child's play.
Jonathan, I want to get to you. Did you want to say something before we take Senator Leahy's questions? I promise to get to you at length later.
Just wanted to make two observations to underline one of the things that Joe said initially, that a lot of what we're talking about didn't begin with this administration. And the reality is that information is politically powerful, and politicians and administrations seek to control the use of information, both in terms of what they let out and what they hide, for political advantage. And in the environmental context, you can see this, with every administration that we've seen in the past 25 years. We've seen examples of administrations withholding information from Congress, withholding it from the press, providing false information to Congress about environmental programs. We've seen prior administrations be selective in what both the timing and content of scientific reports. We've seen White House editing of scientific reports in prior administrations. In terms of secrecy, just from a legal standpoint, in addition to environmental law, I teach constitutional law. Some of the most novel and fanciful assertions of executive privilege ever to be raised in a court of law were raised by the Clinton administration, asserting things like a Secret Service privilege, which no one had ever heard of. So this is something that is I think we've seen historically. This administration admittedly, in terms of its policymaking process, has sought to be more secretive than some prior administrations. And I think that has been to its detriment because it's restricted the flow of information in a lot of contexts. And it also has had to deal with a lot of these questions in a post-9/11 context, which does put on the table legitimate concerns for secrecy in at least certain contexts. But the overall types of actions are things that we've seen, and we can talk. I mean, there were scientists in the Clinton administration, in the first Bush administration, and in the Reagan administration who, when they found themselves on the wrong side of a given policy, found themselves reassigned or found their budgets cut or found them without a job or had their grants threatened either by the administration or members of Congress. It wasn't necessarily always in the climate context. Maybe it was sewage sludge or wetlands or IM-240 or whatever else, but this is something that we've seen, and so I don't. This is not to defend any of it. I think it's all very unfortunate, and all of you do a public service when you expose this sort of thing when it goes on. I just think we need to put it in historical context and recognize that this isn't something that Karl Rove and Dick Cheney invented. Even the unitary executive theory is not something that this administration invented. The assertion that the executive branch can refuse to enforce laws that unconstitutionally impede upon executive authority is a position that was endorsed in memorandums from the Office of Legal Counsel during the Clinton administration as well.
Jonathan.
Well, if I could interrupt just in that, I have no question about the fact that the president decides the law is unconstitutional, can do, can bring a case, can attack the law. What I don't think, though, if a president thinks the law is unconstitutional, why the hell is he signing in the first place? That's the problem. If you sign 700 of these things, and 700 times say, but I'm not going to follow the law, I'm above the law, that goes a lot beyond just some kind of executive privilege. Now, I have no, I hold no brief for the misbehavior of President Clinton, but I'm it's a little bit different that whether you're asking a secret, trying to give a Secret Service privilege so you know who would, you know, who the woman was the president saw in the back room. It's another thing where you're saying we won't know who's on the administration's energy task force even when the regulations come out word for word as the energy companies wrote it, not as the independent committees were supposed to have written it.
I do want to make sure we get at least a question or two in before Senator Leahy has to. These are questions only for the senator at this point. We'll get back to other questions. Vince, you know to introduce yourself.
I'm Vince Patton with KGW-TV in Portland, Oregon. I'm a member of SEJ's FOIA task force. We know that as journalists, we often don't want to step over that line into advocacy, but you should know that this is one area where SEJ is active in advocating for open government, and SEJ has taken a public stand in favor of the FOIA legislation that's pending. My question is about the hold. Earlier this year, I want to say, my memory is fuzzy, I want to say some bloggers generated a firestorm, were able to flush out who had secret holds on another piece of legislation. I'm wondering, we've actually got, for the first time, a reporter from every state in the union at this conference today. You senators are back in your districts for at least one more week, and we go home tomorrow. We have 1 week to ask each and every senator, did you put a hold on this legislation? Would that
help? Yes, but to go one step further, if there is an attempt to bring it up in the lame duck session, would you support bringing it up, or would you support holding it from coming up?
Because those holds are secret, are they not?
Holds are secret. Holds are secret. The extent any time I've ever held up a piece of legislation, I've stated publicly that I do so. I happen to feel that we should. But I wish you'd do that.
Why leave it to the bloggers?
No, I think it'd be great. I applaud you for doing it, but I'd also ask the next one, if when we come back in November, and if this comes up, no matter how you vote on it, will you support having it come up for a vote?
The example Vince is talking about is the Transparency in Government Spending Act, I think it's called, a big database of government spending. Yeah. It's now law.
Which is a great idea, I think.
Question on this side.
My question, Senator, is how you see this clampdown of information affecting the environment. We're environmental journalists, and are there things that you're seeing that we might not be seeing?
Well,
sorry, could you identify yourself?
I'm Kevin O'Connor, and I'm one of the few reporters here who is from Vermont.
By Jesus Crow, that's true. For those, you know, about 40 of you here can speak Vermont, and the rest of us will translate for you. But the where the problem is, and one of the reasons why we want this Restore FOIA Act of mine to take us back before the 9/11 legislation, is that you can, if you're a big polluter, and you're being asked a question, basically, you know, polluters are us, are being asked the question from EPA or anybody else, what have you done? What are you doing on this? Are you draining these wetlands? Are you doing anything else? They can stamp critical information infrastructure on whatever they respond. And nobody's going to see it. Nobody's going to see it. Unless the administration has a change of heart and they actually want to clamp down, then nobody's going to see it. Congress won't see it. Press won't see it. Nobody else will. So, yeah, it's an easy way to protect cost overruns. Trying to find even the most tenuous connection to national security and to the way things are today, you don't need a very tenuous one. Declare everything is national security. You can hide it. And see, this is a mistake. And again, I have given virtually the same, expressed the same philosophy with six different administrations, Republicans and Democrats. It ultimately hurts the administration. That's what they don't seem to understand. If they come forward and think they made mistakes, people say, ooh, boy, you screwed up. What are you going to do to correct it? And you go forward. It's a cover-up. It is a cover-up that always creates a real problem. Unfortunately, now we're talking about cover-ups that can cost all of us tens of billions of dollars.
Our last question comes from the man who put this panel together and to whom I am greatly indebted.
Hi, Robert McClure. I'm with the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. I'm on the SEJ board, and I'm the liaison of the First Amendment Task Force. And this is a question, Senator. You spoke highly of President Bush's executive order of last December, but I have to tell you, the way things are working out in the full field for reporters, is it's still a mess. One outgrowth of that, as you may know, is that when the agencies went and looked at their capabilities for dealing with FOIA, some of them found that they didn't have did not even have enough scanners and copiers to get the job done. And here we are, 10 months later, and half of those agencies have still have not come up with plans for reducing the backlog of FOIA requests, which continues to grow. And so, I guess my question is, aren't the Congress and the administration complicit in underfunding the agencies in their budget needs to respond to FOIA requests?
You know, I have never heard an agency come, and I'm on Appropriations Committee, come certainly in this administration say, we need more money. We need more money to answer FOIA requests. I cannot think of a single time, and I mean, it's possible there has been one. I can't think of any because I can tell you right now, I and several others on the Appropriations Committee have worked like mad to get it. I haven't heard anybody come in and say, can you give us more money so we can get more things out quicker? There are some who love being able to say they don't have the funding. Gosh, we'd love to give you this information. We're just a little bit backed up here. We got something from Pearl Harbor, and as soon as we get that clear. That's why, you know, pass our legislation, you will have incentives. An administrative agency would be delighted to have the incentive because they'll make some money on it. But you also have a way of tracking it and making it very clear to the Congress and everybody else what it's going through. That's why I said that the executive order is a step in the right way. It gives the right thing, but you've got to have it, put it into law and put the mechanics in there. There is no way, as you know yourself, you've done a lot more of this than I have. Some agencies are pretty good at responding. Some are pretty bad. And some just like classifying things. I'll leave you one quick vignette. William Casey was head of the CIA. He was required to tell the intelligence committees, notify of certain activities prior to them happening, which he never did. Invariably, they would appear in the New York Times or the Washington Post, and then he'd come running up in an emergency meeting. I meant to have told you this. I really wanted to tell you this. Nobody in Congress, nobody knew about it, but now it's on the front page of the paper, and he'd tell us. About the third time he did that, I said, think of the money you could save. Stamp the New York Times top secret and have that delivered to us. I said, we have three advantages. One, we would, and I have a copy of this transcript from this. I said, one, we would get the information far quicker than you'll ever give it to us. Secondly, we'll get it in far greater detail than you'd ever give it to us. And thirdly, there is that wonderful crossword puzzle.
Please join me in thanking Senator Leahy for being with us.